Gary Groff and Tony Acidity.
And Kane wasn't even on the broadcast. Ain't that about a bitch? Ladies and gentlemen, May 19th, 2014, Powerhouse Radio presents the Raw Reaction. I am Harry Broadhurst. Joining me at this time is my partner in crime. Hey, Sonny, welcome back.
What up?
Indeed, everybody, you are listening to Powerhouse Radio's Raw Reaction. Again, Harry Broadhurst, Tony Acero. And after your siesta last week, what do you say we get right into the show?
Let's do it.
By the way, I have to check. Sean Carmer may have drank all your Mountain Dew.
Yeah, I heard. I heard that. I'm not too happy about it.
We'll see what we can do, but, well, guests got to crash under circumstances unpreventable.
Right.
All right, let's talk about Raw, Tony. Part number one here, the Beat the Clock Challenge. Okay, so most people know that in addition to doing the Pro Wrestling Powerhouse thing, one of the other things that the Raw Reaction affiliated is a Facebook group is affiliated with is a Facebook group called Yes, Yes, Yes. And we had a post in there stating our thoughts on asking for our thoughts on the Beat the Clock series in addition to the number one contendership tournament that was done in order to figure out what's going on with the Intercontinental title. And I'm of the opinion that things like this add a prestige to the Intercontinental title that has been missing for a while. Tony, your thoughts?
They do. I believe that tournaments and fun things such as the Beat the Clock Challenge or the Gold Rush, they all add an air of intensity that otherwise would be gone if you were just going for the regular one-on-one to crown the new number one contender. However, this particular edition of the Beat the Clock Challenge was lackluster to me, which we'll get into. But yeah, I do feel that these elements of intrigue, as well as just, you know, it's suspense, and suspense heightens our interest. And I think that they can be very capable of helping out not just the contender and the champion, but everyone else that is involved, which is why I have an issue with the one that happened tonight.
We'll get into the individual Beat the Clock series matches here. And one of the things that I'm going to try to do going forward is keeping everybody updated as far as the results from the show in case you missed it and you're listening in to get our opinion of the show and figure out what we thought here. The three Beat the Clock Challenge matches were Big E defeating Ryback with the big ending at 5:02. Rob Van Dam defeated Alberto Del Rio with a roll-up after a missed low super kick at 4:17. And Dolph Ziggler versus Mark Henry failed to beat the clock as time ran out on Ziggler right after he hit the zigzag. Your thoughts on Rob Van Dam winning the Beat the Clock Challenge and going on to face Bad News Barrett as Payback?
I can't complain too much about it because RVD is still a name and Barrett needs someone to fight, not just Big E, but someone different with a little bit more validity in terms of name. But I just can't help but find RVD extremely boring since coming back. It's very, very little to me in terms of entertainment.
Honestly, I think having Ziggler be the challenger for Barrett would have been the way to go here. And the reason say this is because if you remember that number one contenders tournament a couple months ago, or about a month ago actually, the first round matchup that Barrett won in order to advance in that tournament was against Dolph Ziggler, and I would say that it was the best of the first round matches.
Yeah, I could see that.
So I think that Ziggler and Barrett know each other. They've worked well together recently, and on an extended time stage like they would have with the pay-per-view, I think that they would be able to put together something much better than, as you said, an unmotivated Rob Van Dam will probably be able to do.
Right. Yeah, I would have loved Ziggler in there. I'm not really 100% sure where they're going with him, and maybe he will have a chance in the near future. That'd be great. But like I said, there's you don't want to shoot your load too quickly, and Ziggler would definitely be that, I think, simply because you do that match and it's up there. I would love to see it, so maybe the slow burn is good. But then again, that's just wishful thinking. Dolph hasn't touched the spotlight in how long?
Oh, God, I don't think Dolph's been in the spotlight probably since he dropped the heavyweight title after his concussion at the hands of Swagger.
Right.
Anybody got time for that?
Referring to Ziggler, unfortunately. Speaking of Ziggler versus Henry, that was the fuggliest Famouser I think I have ever seen.
Yeah, that was pretty bad. I don't know if
Henry
really
thought he was supposed to catch Ziggler there, but yeah, it was not pretty.
I think that's a possibility. I think Henry was going for the, attempt to stop it, but either way, shit happens. It's Raw.
Well, we can't make the It's Live excuse here because it wasn't.
Right.
With them being over in England tonight, they had to obviously tape earlier because otherwise they'd be running Raw Live at something like 1 a.m. in the morning over there.
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe they just don't care enough to edit out Ziggler's mistakes.
As far as what happened on the Famouser?
That's what I do!
Okay, I'm done with the sound effects for now, I swear. At least until a little bit later in the show. All right, let's talk about Big E and Ryback here real quick. Wasted opportunity here, I think.
Yeah, well, I mean,
because
go ahead.
No. Oh, well, just real quick here, and then I'll let you get your say in as well. The reason I feel it's a wasted opportunity here is because we just saw Big E make the save for Duggan against Rusev last week. So I understand wanting to keep Big E strong, but Ryback is somebody that, realistically speaking, poses an interesting power matchup for Big E. And I don't think that there's anything to gain in them throwing that away in a 5-minute match in the Beat the Clock Challenge series match on Raw.
Yeah, well, this goes along the lines of what I was saying in terms of the Beat the Clock Challenge, where in this particular instance, you've got six men, and it was honestly, I felt that every match was boring just because they knew exactly what was going to happen. Not us as fans, but the writers and the wrestlers. Like, they just went through the motions. Ryback and Big E just did a preview of a match that they could have had. It wasn't bad. It was just so-so. Ryback was, beaten, and it just didn't. It didn't work how it should have, I think. I think you could have done something. You could have made Ryback a little bit more intense or whatever. What basically the point that I'm trying to get to is that you had six opportunities to make something more impactful than it was the week before that. That includes Ryback, Ziggler, Mark Henry, Del Rio, RVD, even Big E. All six of them could have hypothetically moved forward, even just a little bit. Some of them did. What I did like was the little promos just before the match. It made the entire thing a bit more important, gave it some intrigue, and that's what I meant by using it positively. However, just like you said, it was a wasted opportunity. I don't think it did anything for Ryback or Big E, and it just kind of was there.
All right, let's go to Van Damme and Del Rio here. And the issue that I have with this match is we've seen it before recently. We saw it for the World Heavyweight title, I believe, last year before Orton unified the belts, I want to say. I think it happened at, what was it, Hell in a Cell, maybe? Or what was the pay-per-view
mm-hmm.
before Hell in a Cell? Was it Battleground? The September show.
I have no idea.
I'll look into that. And it's just, you got that case of we've seen this before.
Yeah.
Van Damme clearly is not as motivated as he's been at other times in his WWE career. And I think you can tell that Del Rio's kind of reaching a point where in his career in the WWE where he doesn't really care as much as he used to either.
Yeah, I can see that. Maybe he needs an elongated break or a drastic change in character. But that kind of brings up what he said, which is really weird to me, that he's doing this for the children. Is that something that you see growing into something else, or was it just a one-off to get some sort of interest into the match that was going to happen?
I think that was Del Rio just trying to satisfy his own overinflated ego.
Okay.
I don't imagine that it'll go any further than today, but at the same time, you never know with creative. They've been kind of changing from week to week here, so it's something that you kind of have to be ready to adapt on the fly with for the superstars, in addition to us being the people that review it. And
well, I'll tell you my opinion a little bit later in the show in regards to Del Rio.
We call that a teaser, folks. But anyways, and then let's go down to let's get back to Ziggler and Henry here for a quick second. First of all, why are two baby faces facing off in a match on Raw? Are you telling me there's nobody else on the heel side of the roster that could have stepped in to face Ziggler there?
Well, it's a recurring theme that I see having. Like, this again goes in line with what I'm saying. Like, this particular Beat the Clock challenge was seemingly, I want to say, just last minute and didn't really enhance any. It was literally made so that RVD could be the number one contender. Like, that was the only purpose of it. And although that's not a bad thing, it could have been better. You know, you could have had anybody else with Dolph or with Mark Henry, whatever. But instead they went the route that they did. And the match was so-so. It was there, and I don't think anyone cared. I don't think anyone cared about Del Rio versus RVD. I don't think anyone cared about Henry versus Ziggler. I don't think anyone cared about you know, Big E and Ryback. And I also think that all of them were meant specifically to make RVD the number one contender. No one cared about the program until Wade Barrett came out and threw an elbow in RVD's face, including myself.
I did enjoy the reaction that Barrett got, and I am happy that they kind of let Barrett just be a babyface tonight in some regards, because let's be honest here, there's no way he was going to get booed in England, especially not as close to Sheffield as they were.
Yeah, and
so
I'm very
happy
about that,
them.
Too.
Say what?
I'm pretty happy about that, too. I didn't really expect them to go either way, so it wasn't like I was like, oh, good for them. But at the same time, it's very beneficial for them to do what they did.
What did you think of Stephanie working the fans with the giving the title to Bad News Barrett thing from earlier in the show?
It's more of the reality-based TV that they're trying to go for. I thought it was cool. She's playing the crowd. It's exactly what she's supposed to do. It was funny. And it was not like it was going to happen.
Oh, exactly. I completely agree. I thought it was very well fitting for her character to get in another cheap shot at the fans like that, especially after she used the Danielson music Daniel Bryan music to, old habits die hard. After she used the Daniel Bryan music to come down to the ring, that it just made sense that she would tease the fans there by giving them something that they would think that they would want there. And then basically a couple seconds later, just going along the lines of,
it doesn't matter what you think!
Yeah, she did really well. I think, I don't know. I didn't want to talk too much about Brian this week, mainly because we do every week, and I wanted to try to change it up and everything, but at the same time, similar to what I wrote in the Wrestling 5-1 this week, Brian, both as a character and as a man, has gone through so much in recent times that it's very interesting to see the crowd continue to hold on to him as the champion. I'm not saying that I thought for once that they would lose it. I just wanted to highlight that in the column, which I did. The fact that, you know, everything that's been thrown at him in terms of real life, kayfabe, otherwise, he's really been, you know, persistent and persevering in all of them. So I'm interested to see what happens next week.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we'll get into a little bit further here a little bit later on in the show. Well, you're in luck, Tony. It turns out that your stash was not completely poached.
Nice. Yeah, I wanted to talk about, I wouldn't call it a return per se, but the return of the fact that Summer Rae broke up with Fandango. Now, Summer Rae, I happen to enjoy, you know, her presence, if you will, and she seems to be more than serviceable in the ring, and she's also coming in from a slightly different angle than most female wrestlers. I don't mean in terms of where she came from. I mean simply in terms of she was Fandango's valet, blah, blah, blah. Well, it appears that they want us to remember that they broke up 6 weeks ago, as if that is a common theme where people just break up and then 6 weeks later we get an update. I didn't really like that aspect of it. I'm not sure where they're going, if we're going for a Layla versus Summer with Fandango on a pole. I don't really know. But what I do like is that the females are getting a little bit more light shown on them, particularly Summer Rae.
Two things as far as that goes. One, your last name isn't Russo. No booking on a pole anything matches. Two, it goes back to the conversation for me that we were having during Raw when that segment started. And the exact words that I sent to you were, God bless Layla, that is all.
Yes.
I'm incredibly happy to see Layla back on television. I'm very happy to see her featured in a prominent role. As you said, Summer Rae has proven that she's serviceable in the ring, and Layla's proven that given the right opponent, she can go as well. So it's a match that intrigues me as a fan, both of the fact that both women are very good-looking, let's call it a spade here, and also in the fact that both women are seemingly capable enough to put together a solid match inside of the ring once the time comes for that. And I think that's something as fans that we kind of look forward to in, as far as the Divas division goes. Even if most of us are watching for the beauty of the women, one of the reasons we watch wrestling is for the athleticism. And when the Divas can show the athleticism as well, then that's something that we fans tend to take for granted on occasion. But I think that that's something that a match between Summer Rae and Layla could help bring back into the forefront of the fact that, yes, these women are eye candy, but they can also go inside of the ring.
Yeah, and it goes back to the fact that not every diva has to be in the title hunt. Doesn't mean that they don't care. It doesn't mean that it's not a part of what they want or why they're there. But we watch these athletes for a main reason, and that's the storyline or the fights that they have. And this is a situation where a conflict is, you know, there. And this conflict happens to circle around a dancing douche, but it's still something. And it's not, I mean, you know, I'm ready to see where it goes.
I can't help but feel that dancing douche needs to be a sound effect for future episodes. Or as a certain straight edge superstar out of Chicago would put it to him.
You have a vagina!
It has been almost 3 years, I believe, and that is still my favorite soundbite ever.
It's pretty damn awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well,
speaking of Summer, I mean, I've seen the first, I want to say, two episodes of Total Divas for season two. My little sister, who's 15, watches it. She watches wrestling off and on with me as well, and she finds it utterly deplorable. So sometimes I watch it just to see her reactions. But Summer seems to be a little bit of a pain in the ass on the show. Are they, I mean, since I don't watch it in connection to Raw, and I didn't really watch Raw last week, are they bringing that into the fold, or is that something that they're leaving behind?
I do believe that they did air a clip where Summer Rae majorly cock-blocked Fandango on one of the episodes of Total Divas. And then I think that's one of the situations where they've ended up explaining his transfer over to Layla is because of what happened there and then him getting with Layla after what happened on Total Divas. I do not watch Total Divas. And frankly, Ryan Byers is a saint for covering it for 411, so I can kind of keep up on what's happening.
Yeah.
But
he really is.
As far as the actual show goes, we've seen some of the Total Divas stuff spill over into Raw, like last week you weren't around for, but the whole issue with the painting from Natalya to Nikki.
Mm-hmm.
And then that spilled over into a match on Raw and on SmackDown where Eva Marie was the special guest referee, wearing shorts just slightly smaller than the ones Kelly used to wear, I believe.
That's wonderful.
Damn!
Yeah!
seeing as we've been talking about the dancing douche, we're getting ready to go into our first break here, everybody, and I think we have, yes, we do. Let's take you into our first musical interlude. We'll be back with the second of Tony's Sodas, assuming I can find any leftovers from Sean. And in addition, we'll touch on the Shield and Evolution storyline. Back in 3 minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, the Dancing Douche. On the Raw reaction, once again, Harry Broadhurst. Tony, you still with me?
Yes, sir.
All right, and real quick, before we continue the show, we want to make sure we get out a couple of thank yous. I think it's that time. Time to pay some bills, right, Tony?
Yep.
www.blogtalkradio.com. We want to thank them for hosting Powerhouse Radio, which is a production of ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com, www.ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. In addition, you can find Pro Wrestling Powerhouse on Facebook by searching Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. I can be found on Facebook using my name, Harry Broadhurst, or you can join me in the Yes Forums just by searching Yes, Yes, Yes in the search bar. In addition, Tony can be found on Facebook as well with Tony Acero, and go ahead and tell them how they can find you on 411, Tony.
Google me, bitches. No. Yeah, 411mania.com. I do the Wrestling 5-1 every Friday night, Saturday morning, as well as the Monday Night Raw report, which is posted right now. Yeah, that's pretty much where you'll find me, as well as, you know, various other columns whenever the time calls for it.
Let's hear it for me!
Yes!
Yeah. It seemed appropriate.
Oh, it's very appropriate.
Sorry, I'm still having fun with the sound effects on the board here. I'm like a little kid when it comes to these. Where are we here? Gotta check. All right. Let's talk about Raw again, Tony.
All right.
And in order to set this up, let's first go over one of the results from Raw here, and let's mention the fact that Seth Rollins defeated Batista by disqualification.
Yes.
The question that you posed to me in our format here, and I will ask it for you, is the Shield getting too much of an upper hand on Evolution here?
Yes, that is the question that I posed to you. I noticed a few rumblings in the comment section of the Raw report that, you know, Evolution has to get some sort of edge. You know, the Shield has been pretty much on top of things for the most part. And I have to disagree with those comments in regards to Evolution needing more. I mean, seriously, they are Evolution. I think we tend to forget that the names that are involved by comparison to the Shield, I don't see anything wrong in what they're doing. In fact, I applaud Triple H completely for allowing that much, levity in terms of the Shield getting the upper hand. It's Triple H we're talking about here, and he's allowing Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose to beat his ass. I mean, that's a huge statement. I think he really realizes that these guys are going to be the future of the company, that they already are, and he wants to be a part of what gets them there. In terms of storyline etiquette and whatnot, there needs to be some sort of believability that the Shield can beat Evolution, and at the end of the day, Evolution are the heels. They're not supposed to get the upper hand. They're not supposed to be constantly taking over. And the Shield is way different than any other group that we've seen in terms of how they've been built up. So I don't think that there's anything wrong with the way that they're going. And the fact that the crowd is chanting "this is awesome" during a match, during a beatdown, I feel that they're right on course. And I'm loving what's going on, especially today. It was pretty damn awesome.
All right, this is going to be one of the few times where we're going to have to agree to disagree here.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the main things for me about being a pro wrestling fan is the ability to suspend one's disbelief. But when you're constantly having a pair of guys that are, let's face it, not the biggest people in the world, when you compare Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose to guys like Batista and Triple H, Roman Reigns matches up relatively evenly with Batista, so I'll give them that. But when you have guys like Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose constantly getting upper hands on larger, more experienced athletes, such as Triple H and Randy Orton here, I think that it loses some of the suspension of disbelief. And the reason I say that is because I think that with as cerebral as Triple H has always been claimed to be here, the cerebral assassin and all, and the fact that Orton's always been the Viper known to strike at any given moment here, you would think that by now they would have figured out some way to get an upper hand here, whereas instead the Shield had been ahead of them at every turn, going back to Roman Reigns mentioning the fact that they got put in as guest commentators by Roman Reigns beating Brad Maddox's ass in the back.
Yeah. Well, I like to blame it on the fact that Batista is a meathead with no brain, and Randy Orton has been proven to be a little bitch in the last couple of weeks, months even, due to being the lackey of Triple H. Triple H is really the only smart one that has been built as such. The Shield have been consistently built as something and some group entity that is beyond a lot of others. You know, they're so I feel that even though, here's the thing. Just because they're big doesn't necessarily mean that they can't be taken. I agree with your sense of, you know, believability. You want to make sure that you can actually buy this. But I think that because they've been built up so well that we can latch onto it in terms of believability, especially against Batista. Maybe it's just me, but I feel like I could beat Batista's ass. And I'm not buff at all.
Wow. Okay. So most people who know me know that I'm a big fan of Dean Ambrose. And Ambrose is, they've been calling
they've called Rollins the architect. Like, you've got to think that Ambrose is actually the brain behind the Shield.
The reason I say that is because for as loose cannon as Dean Ambrose can be at times, he's the one that's constantly getting involved and constantly evening things up there. Look at the fact that Triple H punking Rollins while he was on the ropes there, and then immediately it was Ambrose onto the attack of Triple H as soon as Triple H pushed Rollins off the ropes.
Well, you see, that's why I really love the Shield. I think that all of them are built up to be something or some semblance of importance. Like, at one minute, you got what they're deeming the architect, talking logically and keeping the group together. And, of course, I'm speaking in all kayfabe terms here where, you know, he's the person that makes sure that nobody goes overboard. He's well aware of his role, and his role isn't a lackey, but a peacekeeper. Then you got Ambrose, who's fucking nuts, but he's controlled chaos to an extent. And he's the one that'll flip out if somebody tries to attack his group or tries to get an upper hand. Him on commentary tonight, fucking gold. Also, Reigns on commentary, he said like 10 words, but that's all he needed to say. It was great. So yeah, I do agree that Ambrose is, in essence, the brain of the operation. I think that Rollins is the peacekeeper, if you will, and Reigns is just Reigns. He's the powerhouse. However, neither one of them, and this took a while to get to this point, neither one of them seemed to be better than the other. There's always going to be a standout. But when the Shield first started, there was this constant belief that, first, the belief that Ambrose was going to be the breakout star. Then it started turning into Reigns. And then Rollins started picking up his own speed and steam. And now we're here where they are all equal, not just to themselves, but to evolution. That's a huge feat.
And the thing is they've been built up, like you said, they've been built up that way since their debut, being on par with Kane and Daniel Bryan and Ryback immediately off of their entrance. When you look back at the six-man tables, ladders, and chairs match that the Shield had against the aforementioned Team Hell No and Ryback at the TLC event back in 2012, less than a month after their actual indoctrination into the WWE at Survivor Series.
Mm-hmm.
They've always been seen as on level footing to stars that were clearly, at least in kayfabe terms, above them as far as the pecking order on the roster.
Yeah, and it just gets to the point where we have to ask ourselves, are they no longer less than, are they now equal to? And I think they've finally gotten there.
Do you think that Evolution is going to have to get the upper hand before we actually go into the payback event here?
Well, I guess that depends on who they want to win. I do believe that Evolution is going to get the upper hand eventually. But, I mean, shit, I'm not going to predict the pay-per-view again. You saw what happened last month.
Oh, no, we'll do our pay-per-view predictions next Monday.
Yeah.
I just don't understand the constant point of the Shield keeping the upper hand here. So that's something that we're just going to have to agree to disagree on. Carrying on here, people. You're in luck. I'm finding more sodas.
Okay, good. Yeah, I wanted to, we touched on Del Rio, and Del Rio has lost a lot of interest, both in, I believe, himself, as well as us believing in the character. Now, the little in-square promos that they had for the Beat the Clock Challenge, I thought those were pretty cool. I thought they added stuff to the matches that preceded it, you know, but what I'm wondering is, I asked earlier, is this Del Rio thing doing it for the children? This is somewhat new. I haven't really heard him speak like that. Is this going to be something new moving forward, or is it just a little bit of a one-time thing? Now, you said it was probably just one time for the match to go, to move forward, I'm sorry. But my opinion, which I wanted to hold off until now, is that I completely agree. I don't think they're going to do anything with it. And that's unfortunate, both for Del Rio and for, you know, anyone that may have been interested in what exactly that meant to him. But I was wondering if in the event, and I don't like booking, I don't like fantasy booking, I don't like pretending that I know what the hell's going on because I don't. But I was just curious, and I wanted to ask you, because you're a little bit better at it, if that promo did lead to something, what would you want it to lead to? Would he be trying to usher in a new bevy of children followers like Wyatt? Or would he be, you know, just constant promos of how he needs to save the world, he's your Mexican superhero, and blah, blah, blah. And if he does do that, is it enough for us to give a damn?
Between the two choices, I think Mexican superhero is a lot more likely, especially when you factor in that this entire time JBL's been calling him Mexico's greatest export as it is. Is it enough to make people give a damn anymore? No. He's gotten so stale as a character, as the aristocratic snob, that it goes back to what you said earlier. The character needs a tweaking. If anybody's going to care, if he's going to be anything productive until his contract runs out, it's going to need a tweaking here, because obviously the pinnacle has been reached for that character, and Del Rio's basically just circling the wagons at this point.
Yeah, and how long have they been saying he's showing a new aggressive side every time he's in the ring? It's not new anymore, Cole. There's no difference than last week, than last month, than last year. So I believe there does need to be a tweak. I just don't know what it would be. Is it a complete character overhaul? Is it something new? Is it a valet? Rosa Mendez was on his arm for a whole week. The Bellas were with him for another week. Is it a storyline that intrigues us? Is it another Mexican wrestler that isn't injury prone? Is it, you know, I don't know.
I think they've done about as much as they can do with the Del Rio Sin Cara thing. Now, if you're referring to Rey Mysterio Jr., I don't see them ever becoming allies, especially given their history there. I mean, it would take a lot of rewriting of their backstory in order to find any kind of a circumstance where Del Rio and Mysterio could get along. I think Del Rio's a lot more likely to get along with this incarnation of Sin Cara than he was the original, but at the same time, I don't see that happening either. You do raise a good point, though, and that's the Rosa Mendez case here, and I think that we're going to see Rosa getting more TV time, especially with the news coming out that she might be involved with Season 3 of Total Divas.
Yeah.
And I think if that happens, then I think Rosa might be just the thing to add a little bit of fresh flavor to Del Rio's character. Because we've seen the romance angle, how it's helping with increased interest in Summer Rae and Layla, as we talked about a little bit earlier. But would it have the same effect for Del Rio is what I'm wondering.
Yeah, I just don't think that people care about Rosa Mendez enough to add anything, but you never know. The Total Divas, I think it's a surprise how many people actually watch that, or at the very least, read Ryan's report. So, of course, because she's on the show, just like you said, they're going to push her. She's going to become more prominent, even if it's just a little bit, and Del Rio seems to... at this point, he's going to bring up anything's going to add to the intrigue that he just has been suffering from not having.
All right, so real quick, before we go to our second commercial break here, Tony, I happen to know of your affinity for independent professional wrestling.
Huh.
The infamous story you've had with Kara Calloway is well documented.
Right.
I myself work as an independent play-by-play announcer, and that's something that we did want to touch on at one point in the show. I don't know if it's going to be today or if it'll be a later show, of how being a fan watching the shows at home as to being an announcer in my case, or being a writer for 411 in your case, how that translates into our experience of the shows. But one of the things that I'd like to start doing here is I'd like to start helping to promote independent wrestling a little bit better as well.
Okay.
And with that said there, one of my favorite independent promotions, Shikara, makes its return this Sunday. Shikara has been on hiatus since June of last year, 11 months in the making, and they're finally returning with an internet pay-per-view this Sunday called You Only Live Twice. I personally plan to be ordering the show. I was going to attend the show, but unfortunately circumstances beyond my control prevented that. However, I plan on watching on Sunday and catching the return there, and I can guarantee that for wrestling fans of all ages, it'll be an interesting show if you can get over some of the wackier characters. But the main driving storyline is something that will appeal to everybody, in that higher powers are trying to basically keep Shikara down. When Shikara went out of business back in June of last year, it was due to the fact that their owners at the time basically sent out an assault staff to take out everybody and everything involved with Shikara. We see the resurrection this Sunday, but apparently the groups of Rudos from the past don't want to see this resurrection happen. And there will be a lot of big names at this show, too. Guys that you've heard of, like Jimmy Jacobs, like Sin Bodhi, who used to be Kazarni in the WWE. A couple people that you're probably fond of in the WWE right now have Chikara roots. Look at Luke Harper, who used to be in Chikara's Brody Lee. Daniel Bryan used to wrestle for Chikara. And there's, the list goes on and on. Cesaro used to be Claudio Castagnoli in Chikara. So I think it's something that most fans will definitely enjoy checking out here. And if I'd have thought to do it, I would have done one of these plugs for War of the Worlds last Saturday night as well for ROH and New Japan Pro Wrestling, because, as I understand it, they put on a hell of a show on Saturday night.
Nice. Well, I'm looking forward to checking it out. I probably won't do it live. However, I have seen a couple of Chikara shows. Good friend Michael Ornelas actually pushed me to do so. He's probably the biggest reason why I even know about indie wrestling. Second biggest reason would be Tara Calloway and the fact that, you know, I have a close relationship with her and, you know, I've circled California with her. And since we're on the subject, I do want to completely congratulate Willie Mack, who I've met countless times. He's hilarious. He's funny. He's a great talent. If the rumors are true, he's got a developmental deal with the WWE. If they're not true, then at the very least, there's rumors flying around about him, and that's never bad. So, if,
yeah,
like I said, if they are true, give him a pat on
the
back.
WWE's radar.
Yeah. And that's some good stuff, because the man, he's a thicker dude. You know, if any of the listeners don't know who he is, which I doubt it. If you're listening to this show, you're into wrestling way too much, okay? So you probably know who Willie Mack is. I remember what strikes me the most about him is just how quick he is for a big guy. Very agile, very entertaining, very unique in terms of character, and I'm really looking forward to seeing what he could bring to the table if, in the event, he is heading towards the big leagues.
Our guest last week, our special guest host, Sean Garmer, last week, who does Wrestling to the Max, there was a post on the Wrestling to the Max page about Willie Mack that had the perfect way to describe him, I think. He is a cruiserweight in the heavyweight's body.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that there's any other better way to put it as far as Willie Mack goes. I'm a big fan of Chocolate Thunder. I have a ton of PWG DVDs. Try saying that five times fast. And if it is true about Willie getting a chance down in Florida at NXT, then I look forward to seeing what they're going to do with him down there. We're going to head into our second commercial break here, and then when we come back, this week's Harry's Hit, as I touch on the evolution of Adam Rose. Hey, Tony, pick the song.
I want to hear DDP's song.
All right. Make me go all the way up to the top of the list. Thanks for that.
I like being difficult.
Clearly. All right. Self high five and then back with Harry's Hit right after this. This is The Raw Reaction on Powerhouse Radio.
Self high five. We'll be right back.
And we are back here. The Raw reaction continues. I'm Harry Broadhurst, still sitting across from me, I hope. Tony Acero.
Yep, I'm right here.
All right, let's get to Harry's hit, shall we?
Let's do it.
All right, so a couple weeks ago, we had the debut of the South African sensation, the Axl Rose parody, Adam Rose. The lavish British rock star basically based on the character from Get 'Em to the Greek with, God, his name is escaping me right now.
Russell Brand.
Russell Brand, thank you. Katy Perry's ex-husband, anyways. And we both agreed that we thought that the debut was disappointing.
Right.
I personally think that Rose is starting to find his footing in this feud with Jack Swagger, and he showed a much more aggressive side tonight in the way that he embraced the beatdown from Swagger and then was able to get right back to his feet and show that he can stand and hang his own after he got the attack on Swagger right after Swagger got into the face of one of his partygoers and then came back with the leaping attack that took Swagger down and Swagger rolled out to the floor. I don't think there's any question that this is leading to a match at Payback, which leads me to a two-part question for you here, Tony.
Okay.
Number one, do you have any interest in seeing the match between Swagger and Rose at Payback? And number two, do you think that Rose is starting to find his footing after, as we said earlier, a lackluster debut?
Do I want to see it? Sure, why not? I want to see what he can do. I want to see how he can go. And Jack Swagger, as much as his character lacks interest at times, he's still a great wrestler. So I feel that they'd be able to do something that's both fun and entertaining. And the interaction with Zev is also very fun and entertaining. It does seem out of nowhere, but I'll let it ride. In terms of him finding his footing, this week was, this week was a bit better. It was better. We get more of what he's coming from. He is really just the dude that's like, you know, everybody chill. Yeah.
He's Rob Van Dam in real life, basically.
Yeah.
That kind of almost stoner attitude to him. Like, Van Dam was notorious for everything's okay, dude, it's cool, it's whatever. That's kind of, up until tonight, the basic effect that Adam Rose had, and that he had never gotten physical with anybody, and it was kind of like, as he said, it's party time all the time. Well, I think tonight a much more serious side of Adam Rose came out, and I think that that right there is the side that's going to help translate and be able to springboard the gimmick into something further than just being that. It's a party gimmick at this point. It could actually see something that could get a footing, at least in the mid-card.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see him up to the top. So, yeah, he's definitely going to be a mid-card. However, I agree that, you know, that when he was hit in the face and he was still trying to party, but you could see he was, of course it's acting, but you could see he's, like, a little upset, like, you know, I do like to party, but if this fool keeps pissing me off, it's only a matter of time before I break his face, you know. That attitude, that's something that needs to come out, and I think it will.
Well, if you recall correctly, what he actually said to Renee at the end of that segment is sometimes you have to fight, but it's party time all the time.
Yeah.
And
I
think that right there will tie into the evolution of Adam Rose, which is what I was going with when I said that before we went to the DDP musical interlude. Real quick hit here. He debuts this Friday on SmackDown. We won't be back on air until next Monday on Raw. What do you think are Bo Dallas's chances with the motivational speaker gimmick?
Oh, I don't know, man. You debut on SmackDown, you're almost screwed anyway. But I think it's in how he carries himself. I haven't seen this. I've heard that he does it at NXT. I haven't seen the persona be displayed on TV. But if it's as over the top and as just, you know, see right through, like as transparent as I believe it's going to be, then it's going to be hilarious and in a good way. I can't wait to see him try to motivate a particular person. I mean, all he's missing is DDP's white teeth to be something awesome.
I have a thought for a potential ally for Bo Dallas.
Nice.
Damian Sandow.
Yeah, I mean, well, there's Sandow thinking that he's the intellectual savior of everyone, while Bo himself is saying that he is just the motivation behind everyone.
Well, the thing is it's obvious that Sandow's in a tailspin right now.
A horrible tailspin.
And
it feels so bad.
Oh, you and me both. I'm a huge Damian Sandow fan. But at the same time, I think that maybe having somebody like Bo Dallas in his corner, kind of like what DDP, as you said, what DDP did for Christian back in 2002, before DDP had to retire from the WWE due to the back injuries that he suffered.
I get what you're saying. You're saying that Bo would be the motivator for Sandow to become something. I thought you meant a possible, you know, you said ally, which I didn't pick up on. Yeah, I think that'd be hilarious. I think
and,
there's plenty of potential.
And I think Sandow's more than proven his worth as an entertainer in addition to being a wrestler, and that their interactions with each other could be very entertaining for the time that they get TV time-wise, I think, anyways.
Yeah, I believe so. And I think that it's I think those two would work out. And, I mean, you've always been better at predictions than I have, so I believe that if it did go down, I very much applaud you. Do you think they're going to tie him with someone like
You're
that?
You're welcome!
Perfect. That was perfect.
do I think that they'll end up putting Sandow and Dallas together? Not at first, but it wouldn't surprise me if they continue down the Sandow tailspin road that they've been going down. It would not surprise me at all to see those two aligned in some way, shape, form, or fashion, anyways.
Yeah. Well, why do you think he's going to debut on SmackDown? Simply because there's too many that's happened on Raw?
Well, the other thing about that, too, is you said that debuting on SmackDown is kind of a curse. And in a sense, it can be, but let's also remember that Randy Orton and John Cena both debuted on SmackDown as well.
Oh, but that was a different SmackDown. That SmackDown was awesome.
That was in the 2002 era. Orton's in April, Cena's in June against Kurt Angle, I believe.
Angle, yep.
I know who the opponent was, but I'm trying to remember the time frame. I think it was June of 2002. And I'm sure if I checked one of the Cena DVDs I have over here, I'd find out the date specifically. But frankly, I don't feel like getting up right now.
What are you doing with a Cena DVD?
We'll get back to that later. Anyways, I'm a collector. I have over 2,000 DVDs in my collection.
All right. Well.
It's just kind of what I do. Whenever I can find something at a reasonable price, I pick it up. But anyways, it turns out I actually have a backlog here, so you're in luck today, Tony.
Nice. Suck it, Sean. Anyways, I wanted to talk about Luke Harper. for anyone that saw the match with John Cena, okay, Harper has always been in the background, and it seems like every week he brings something new to the table that makes you say, what the fuck? The dude did a Hurricane Rana, okay, and it looked better than some cruiserweights. Do you know the stats on him? How much does this guy weigh?
Harper, hold on, I have my almanac. If I decide to hear this one, I can check real quick. Go ahead and continue your point, and as soon as I find it, I'll let you know.
Yeah, well, he's huge, all right? He's a big guy, and you know he's showed continuous life. He's doing suicide dives. He's adding more and more to his character. When he rubbed his forehead against the ropes, he showed frustration. He's like one of those dudes that grew up not knowing what pain is, but realizing frustration when he's losing. Because he doesn't look like he's hurt. Like when he's when he was in the STF, he wasn't screaming out of pain. Just realize, like, hey, I can't take this. And, of course, I'm speaking in kayfabe terms, like the dude's not hurt at all. But he's got a full grasp on who his character is, who he wants his character to be, and who his character's supposed to be. I love character development, and he's doing it on a weekly basis, adding more and more, saying more and more. Him counting to 10 while Wyatt was singing, that was a nice little touch. The match as a whole was really good, and it's rare to see a nice balance with opponents to Cena. Like, I didn't feel at once that he was being overshadowed by Cena, or that it was the same thing where we saw an ass-kicking before Cena just hit an AA and won. This was a balanced match, and I think a lot of it has to do with just the fact that Harper is he's a real deal.
6'7", 280 pounds.
Yeah, man, that's a 300-pound Hurricane Rana. What the shit? Who does that?
Not only was it a 300-pound Hurricane Rana, it was a 300-pound beautiful Hurricane Rana.
Yeah.
As I said when I helped chip in a little bit there on the Raw report for 4-on-1, shades of his Chikara buddy Hollow Wicket there. Hollow Wicket's a big dude, too, not as heavy, but also a big guy, and that's where the step-up Rana came from his feud with Hollow Wicket.
Mm. Okay. Well, thank you. Yeah, he's got the great look. He's got the beady eyes. He's got the weirdness down. And I know he's been harboring this particular character for years now before even teaming up with Wyatt. So it's great that he's got it. But it's even better that it's being exposed on a national stage. I think and I hope that he can be something just a little bit bigger. What is he? He's probably in his 30s, right? So hopefully he's got some time maybe to be something else. I don't know. I just really like the guy. I really wanted to highlight that particular aspect of the show tonight. He's another one of the younger guys, and I don't mean younger in age, but as far as status, that I hope gets a chance to continue to tell his story.
Do you think when the time comes and the Wyatt family is no more, do you think there is at all a possibility that Harper could end up being a bigger star than Bray Wyatt himself?
That's a tough one. I think he's got the size. I don't know if he's got the backing. I think because of Bray Wyatt's character, that he is going to be a big deal, regardless. I think that they've signed up for it. They're going to push it. They're going to harbor him into the next Mankind. So I think he has a better chance than Harper does.
Okay, but I think we can both definitely agree that Harper has a lot more upside than Eric Rowan does at this point, at least.
Yeah, Rowan's the third wheel for sure.
I mean, Rowan's improving, don't get me wrong. I'm not, like, sitting here trying to hate on the guy or anything, but at the same time, there it's pretty clear, to me at least, that Rowan is nowhere near on the level of Harper in the ring or Wyatt on the microphone.
Right, and I think that's why they keep him in the background. I think that you know, he's the third wheel for a reason. But you can't be surrounded by, you know, a better group of people.
Right. Luke Harper is 35, by the way. Well, 34. He'll be 35 in December.
Got it.
All right. Tony, let's talk about Raw.
Yes,
Kind of what we've been doing this whole show, but, you know. More specifically, let's discuss our expectations of Raw going across the pond and how we thought that this Raw came off compared to previous episodes that were done outside of the U.S. Do you think that tonight's Raw lived up to the usual high-quality standards that we traditionally get when Raw goes to, like, an England, like a China, like a Germany?
I think so. I think that this one falls in line with the higher ranking shows for a couple of reasons. With a 3-hour show, you're always going to get crap. So I can no longer say, oh, well, you know, they really shouldn't have done this, that, or whatever. But for the most part, everything had a direction. Everything led to something. Even if it was boring on its way there, it led to something. You had a great match with Rollins and Batista. I thought it was a really good match. I was impressed with Rollins, as usual, and with Batista's ability to at least not fuck up. Sheamus and Cesaro opened the show with some hard-hitting, like, they beat each other's ass. And it wasn't that long. I want more.
If I could chime in here real quick as far as Sheamus and Cesaro go, you almost have to think that Cesaro's victory tonight leads to a U.S. title rematch at Payback, and I am looking forward to seeing them beat the holy hell out of each other for 15 minutes on pay-per-view.
Yeah, and then you also had Paige versus Alicia. I don't know what they're doing with Alicia Fox, But she didn't do too bad. She didn't mess up anything that I saw. She didn't really hurt anyone, which I always think that she's going to. She seems to be one of the, not sloppy, but one of the unsafe workers that doesn't know how to properly, you know, take care of their opponent. However, she could very well be so good that it just looks that way. I don't know. I haven't made a decision yet. But even the women's match had something interesting to see. It was development. Like I said, it led to something, even if it was a little bit weird. So, yeah, the show. And then they had Wade Barrett, who is a heel, who they didn't overdo it. They knew, like you said earlier, they knew that he was going to get cheered, but they didn't, like, ride on that. And, man, the WWE is just so freaking bad at doing that. They over amplify everything. So, yeah, I thought the show was up there with a good one in general, let alone being overseas.
The big issues that I have here is I don't think that you should have had Paige lose in her first match back home. I think Paige is something that the women over there can aspire to. Independent wrestling over in Britain isn't anything like what it used to be, but at the same time, there are promotions that are up and coming over there where you're getting more and more women coming over to the States. Another female that comes from across the pond, I believe her name was Shayna or Shauna, was just involved with Adam Rose's entourage a couple weeks ago, and I think that having Paige as a role model for the women over there and giving her a quality win in her return home would have been something nice for them to do for the UK crowd. Granted, they gave the UK crowd their stand-up moment with Wade Barrett a little bit later in the night, but at the same time, I still think that having Paige lose in her first match across the pond was a bad decision. That being said, I'm with you in the fact that I think that tonight's episode of Raw was an above-average episode for one where they had to pre-tape. And I think pre-taping hurts because you lose some of the interaction with the live audience, like the ability to do the polls and stuff that they seem to always harp on with the app. So notice there was significantly less plugging of the WWE app tonight than there would normally be during an episode.
Yeah, do you feel that, although I do agree that Paige shouldn't have lost, do you feel that it was one of the few things that they do in wrestling that they hold true to, like a little bit? The girl's 21 years old. Do you think that maybe they were like, and I do think, that's what I'm asking, I do think that they were like, hey, this is basically what happens in wrestling. You're going to go to your hometown, and you're going to lose. Let's see how you react. Are you going to be a bitch about it, or are you going to do what you got to do? Because it is traditional. It's something that we laugh about in the IWC that, you know, if you're in your hometown, you're going to lose, you know? So I don't know, were they trying to do that, or is this something that's just amplifying a storyline to come for Alicia Fox?
Well, I think part of it has to do with the initiation process of how do you feel about ending up on your back in your hometown. And I seem to remember that being an issue for people in the past as well. So the question will be, how does Paige respond to this? Does she come out of this with her head held high, or does she have a bit of a chip on her shoulder about it, about the fact that it was her first time at home and they actually had her end up on her back?
She seems like a humble person, so I'm sure just her being there was good enough for her.
And the other thing is, it's an extended tour. She's the defending Divas Champion. I'm sure she's going to get plenty of wins on the tour.
Yeah.
So what's one televised loss compared to getting all the wins and all the interaction with your hometown people? Do I think it was necessary for the development of the storyline for her to lose tonight? No. Do I understand why it was done the way that it was done tonight, though? Yes, because they're trying to build up Alicia Fox as a credible threat because, A, they really don't have any other heel divas that are credible threats, and, B, AJ Lee still isn't back yet.
That's going to be the show for tonight, folks. We're going to have to cut this one early due to emotional stress caused by Harry's voice and truthful facts.
Here, this one's for you, Tony.
Damn! No, I'm kidding, folks. We are pretty close to the end, but don't worry. It's funny that you bring this up because there is a I'm reading the Raw report right now, and there was a comment that has since been deleted, unfortunately. I hate when they delete comments. I really wish that they would just let them stay there. But someone called me a preteen fan in the same vein as Justin Bieber due to my obsessive nature over AJ, and that I need to get a life and should really, really look into some help. So I wrote...
Nobody really knows this, but...
Tony Basero.
The softest lips. And sometimes, at night, we spoon.
I commented back in response to that AJ and I are going to get married and have babies, and he's not going to be invited to any of our dinner parties. But it looks like the moderators at 411 decided for that to not be shown to the world. So it's okay. If you're listening, Mr. Whoever you are, I do not delete comments. I never have. I never will. I thoroughly love people that take things too seriously. So bring it on.
Stupid freedom of speech Nazis.
Yeah, it is unfortunate. They asked me when they had the new commentary system, the new comment section, they asked me if I wanted to be a moderator, and I had said no. And they're like, well, you know, you're a writer on the site. You've been here for a while. Like, you know, it's okay if you want to be. It's not that big of a responsibility. It's just it gives you power to delete comments that you deem unworthy of being posted. And I'm like, no, man. Like, I love – Greg and I have always, always encouraged the people that think he's a pedophile from some state on the East Coast and think that I sincerely want to propose to AJ and run away with her for years on end.
I'm becoming mildly obsessed with Layla, so, you know. I sympathize with your pain over losing your beloved. Mine was off of TV for several weeks.
She'll be back.
You just got to keep telling yourself that, man. All right. Now, one of the things that I've been pestering Greg about was to get us a soundbite for this, but since it's not in yet, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for your final reaction. Tony, go ahead.
Yeah, what we're going to be doing here is giving the Raw show a grade from, you know, the traditional A to F standard and just kind of give a reasoning as to why. I'm going to go ahead and give this one a B, you know, just right there. It wasn't average. It's a little bit more than average. I think it weighs heavily on the match between Sheamus and Cesaro, the interaction with the Shield and Evolution, and just the overall feel of the crowd, which sometimes got a bit out of hand, and they really need to harbor back certain chants of certain people when a match is going on. I find it rude and unnecessary. But at the same time, it's better than hearing a crowd do absolutely nothing. So, yeah, I'd go with a B, and I'm gonna stick with that.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I have some decorum, please?
I'm completely with you on the overly snarky crowds. There are certain times where you come to expect these things. I mean, overseas is one. The night after WrestleMania is another. But when you get a random crowd inside of Milwaukee chanting some of the crap that you usually hear at these shows there, it gets kind of ridiculous. The people inside of the ring are there to tell you the story. They're there to try to further their storyline. Whether you're taking offense with their storyline or not, at least be respectful of the guys and the ladies inside of the ring busting their asses to entertain you.
Yeah, I've never been a fan. That's a topic that we can really bring up next week or a week after because I've got plenty to say about it. I've even written about it. But yeah. But other than that, the show I think deserves a B.
I was looking for a B plus sound effect on here and I'm a little disappointed that we don't have one. I'm with you. I call it a B. I was actually going to give it an actual B plus too. That wasn't me trying to be witty, although it kind of worked out that way, but I was going to give the show a B+. I thought a lot of the things that happened had a reason for happening. We finally got off of the Rusev is a racist kick. I don't know if I agree with Paige losing her first match, but I understand the reasoning behind it, and it's in order to set up Alicia and Paige for the Divas title a little bit further down the road, so I'm okay with that. We had the continuation of the Evolution versus Shield storyline, which despite some reservations as to how much the Shield has been given there, I agree has been incredibly awesome. The matches have almost always been entertaining. And as you said, Ambrose on commentary tonight was freaking genius. And Reigns is a trooper after seeing that gas on his face. Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty badass. It looked like a vagina over his eye.
Damn it, Tony.
You have a vagina!
Sound monkey scrambling. Jesus. Anyways, but as you were saying, Sheamus and Cesaro was really entertaining. Cena and Harper had what I think will be looked back on as Harper's breakout moment, because the fact that he was able to go almost, what was it, 12 minutes in the main event with Cena and not only hold his own, but look like he wasn't completely in over his head.
Yeah, he looks like
it's something
that
I think we'll look back on as to the maturation process of one Luke Harper.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I'm with
yeah.
you. I say B-plus for tonight's episode.
All right, well, there you go, folks.
I think, you got anything else? Oh, by the way, I want to say something here before I do my spiel to end the show. Congratulations, graduate.
Oh, thank you. Yes, I am done with school. I will officially receive my bachelor's degree on Wednesday. I'm going to walk in the hot sun. Going to try to sneak a Batman cape in and hope I don't get kicked out. I will not be wearing anything underneath the cap and gown, so if there's a nice breeze, you're welcome to everyone. I'm looking forward to later that night where I'll be reading one of my short stories, which will be published in a book later this year. And after that, I'm going to go to a bar and hope that people buy me shots left and right.
You're welcome!
You say it and the sound monkey jumps.
Yes.
All right, he's Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst. This has been the Raw Reaction, a presentation, had a bit of a tongue-twisted moment there, of Powerhouse Radio in association with ProWrestlingPowerhouse.com. We want to thank you for joining us, and we will see you right back here May 26th at 11:30 p.m. as we wish you a happy Memorial Day the next time we're with you. Ladies and gentlemen, we want to thank you for listening. Have a great evening. We'll see you next time here on The Raw Reaction.
Deuces.
Raw Reaction, a presentation of Powerhouse Radio in association with Pro Wrestling Powerhouse. www.prowrestlingpowerhouse.com. We will see you on Wednesday night here on Blog Talk Radio.